Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show. Production of the Spread Hope Like Fire nonprofit 501c3 here in California. I'm your host, Anthony Garcia, Associate Marriage and Family Therapist, and we're here to break down the barriers and change the mental health game. Here on the podcast, we try to humanize and normalize our experiences through life when trauma kicks in and life changes abruptly. We come together and share our stories in hopes to break the stigma on mental health. If you're looking for more information on who we are, the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, you can visit us at spreadhopelikefire.com. And again, this is a listener-supported podcast, which means it's supported by listeners like you. The way in which we ask that you support us is heading over to Apple's podcast store, giving us a 5-star review, and writing a review as well. It helps with the algorithm. This is going to be the second episode of the After Midnight Society podcast series, and we have a guest tonight. I am honored to have her. She had been on the podcast in season one. She shared her story of the traumatic experience that she went through at the shooting in Vegas and just opened up and really just touched a lot of people's hearts and allowed a lot of people to heal from that trauma, because that was a severe trauma. A lot of us were affected, and a lot of us knew people within that concert that night, and it really affected a lot of people. She is back tonight, but again, she's more here to advocate, and she's here to share with us her struggle still, but also her achievement. She's really grown as a person, and with me, it's she's become a close friend, and suffering from PTSD myself and having Michelle suffer from that same disorder, it's a hard world to live in. And when you find yourself kind of segregated to a degree because you don't understand the world anymore, you becomes lonely. And it's a hard road to walk, especially when you're walking this thing alone, because with PTSD, it's hard because there are a lot of things trigger you and you're on edge, and then there's hypervigilance within it, and it's just a big beast to deal with. And so I turned to Michelle because I knew her struggle. She made it public, and when I would read her post, what would happen was there was this chain reaction within my brain that I knew I could trust her, because I didn't trust people. It was hard to trust. Still kind of is, but when I opened up and she started to explain to me how to deal and handle with PTSD, I actually sought out therapy for the first time again. And that's where I was introduced to the EMDR therapeutic modality, which changed my life. And I can't see myself or my life where it is today without seeking out this treatment. And a lot of it had to do with Michelle, with her own struggles and battles and us. I don't know how many people know, but she was on the previous podcast, and we recorded that podcast. That's when I started Spread Hope. And I had set up shop in my shed in my backyard, and we sat in my old shed, and we sat and processed what it is she was going through. We cried together. We shared a great experience, and we were able to capture that on the podcast and share it with you. And without Michelle's help, I don't know where I would be with learning about PTSD and having her talk me down the le off the ledge sometimes. And just it's a difficult thing to deal with this PTSD. You don't feel normal. You don't feel like you fit in. You feel ostracized. You feel ostracized from yourself sometimes as you don't understand how to process these feelings. You are, Michelle, one of the strongest, if not the strongest, ladies or women I know. And I thank you again for coming on here, being so brave and sharing your story and just doing exactly what I thought we were going to set out to do, and that is to break the stigma on mental health. And in doing so, the way we do it is come out here and share our story so that we can connect, we can support one another, direct one another into how to get services and how to cope and build those supports. So, without further ado, just to forewarn you before we jump into the interview, audio's a little off. I tried to fix it the best I could. I recorded it with some wonky headphones and it kind of gave us some weird feedback. I didn't catch it until the very end. So without further ado, we're just gonna jump into the conversation already in progress. I welcome Michelle Patterson to the show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I had to laugh because when I listened to it, I said 2,200. There was actually 22,000 people there that night. So I did need to correct that. But yes, no, I don't remember you telling me, but it was 3 years ago, so a little over 3 years ago. But thank you. Yeah. I do have to tell you that I need to just tell you how proud I am of you. You have just achieved your goals and your dreams. I'm just so proud of you. When I first met you, you were working in the garden center at Target with me. And look at you now. I mean, you've written books, you've written a screenplay, you're a psychotherapist, you have a podcast. You're just amazing. I just hope you know how amazing I think you are. And I'm just one of your biggest fans.
And I never know what to say in these situations. Coming from you, that you know how much that means, and I'm just doing what I think. I don't know. I think I'm supposed be doing. Like I found my purpose, or I never know what to say. I just don't. You've been the person in which I learn with PTSD, I guess. But for me to stop my awkward rambling, I guess, that
Well,
just made my day. It honestly did.
having known some of what you've gone through in your childhood, and just knowing that you used to really hide behind your humor, and I could tell that you were just shy, and you really did. You used to make us laugh, and I think that was part of who you used to hide behind was your comedic self, and you just came a long way. I mean, seriously, you worked in the garden center, and then look at where you are. I mean, crushed your goals. I mean, went to college and got your master's, got your doctorate. I mean, come on, crushed your goals. I'm just so proud of you. I mean, it's just, I'm in awe. I really am. And I just don't
Oh.
think you hear that enough. And I just literally sit back and I'm like, wow, I knew you win. I can honestly sit here and say, I knew you win.
Again, that coming from you is just it's just I don't know what to say. I used to hide behind humor and I still do. My humor, I'm a comedic genius. What can I say? I hide behind my humor because I guess through everything, when I make people laugh, when I'm around people, that's how That's how I feel comfortable, is by others laughing around me. And if that's okay, and they're laughing, and then I feel like I belong. And to me, laughter is like, I don't know, like, you know how I grew up. And one of the funny things that happened was, like, going to school and getting in trouble. I didn't get in trouble much, but when I did, like, not like where parents were mad at me, I mean, but I'd get into trouble. But I remember one time, like, my dad decided out of the blue to go and go to my parent, no, not my parent, but my field trip as a chaperone. And so what would have happened was this chain of events. When we would stay in motel rooms, what would happen is we had I had HBO because that's what the motels offered, and I would watch all the comedy specials. Like, back in the day, it was just Eddie Murphy, Bob Saget, George Carlin. What growing up, one of my favorites was Chris Rock. Chris Rock, I still love to this day, but it. I don't know. I think that's why I relate to so much to The Office. I know I'm rambling about this story right now, but this is what I guess comes up when you bring up humor. And explaining more of me is, like, I went to school and I did Chris Rock's act. Straight up, this I did the act, I did the bits, and I was getting all these laughs from everybody, and the kids, like, accepted me because I was always an outcast, and that's how I got accepted. Was early on, I learned if I made these people laugh, that I would be accepted. And therefore, what happened was Tony decided to come to the fucking school, and he talked to the kids. And I'm over there playing basketball, and here he comes, my dad. And if I could paint a picture for him, he's got he's like the Jack Tripper from the 70s, but fast forward to the 90s, he's got these pink short shorts on. And if you sock checked him, he would pass. He had his Nikes, all his white Nikes on, and his polo shirt, tucked in. Well, here he comes, the mustache. Here he comes, looking like one of the village people, and he's pissed, and he pulls me to the side, and he's literally just on my ass about why I'm cussing, and where do I get this from, and how I handle it, or not how I handle this, why do I do this, and I know what's wrong, and this and that. Where do I learn it from? Me being the comedic genius that I am. So he wanted to know where I learned it from and everything, like I said. And I just did the 90s commercial thing on him. I just learned it from you. And that didn't end well. So, man, that just, yeah. So laughter, that I hide behind that. And that's just how I guess I feel comfortable and safe. Safe comedy is my safety spot. Like, I could sit and just watch comedy specials all day, but, like, that's just my safety spot, and that's how I make people like that's how we connected. That
That's
makes that,
amazing.
but yeah, we've come a lot. We've come far, me and you. And, like, one of the greatest things I think that we bonded over too was, like, when my dog passed, you reached out to me, and just, like, realizing, like, how emotional support animals were amazing. And, like, that's like,
That's an
I'm
unconditional
struggling.
love. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you and your cat. Like,
My
your cat
cat's my
is
best friend.
amazing.
Yeah. He was my emotional support animal. After the shooting, I struggled, and my son was the one that suggested I get an emotional support animal. And that's Arrow, and he is my best friend. Yeah. And I
Animals
dread the
will.
day that comes when he crosses the rainbow bridge, and my heart goes out to you because I know Missy was your best friend. So, yeah.
You will get through it, I promise. It'll be
Well,
hard. It's the hardest thing.
the way I describe it is it's like losing your arm. It hurts like hell. I mean, but you learn to adapt and to be without it, but it still hurts and it's missing and it's always going to be like
Yeah,
that. Yeah, I
it's
get
a
it.
struggle, and I guess just checking in at this point with everything and how people with PTSD are handling this pandemic. I just how have you been handling the pandemic? How have you been dealing with mental health, day-to-day activities? Let's just get into it.
Honestly, I probably haven't been handling it very well, but I'm kind of an introvert anyway, ever since the shooting. So, it's a struggle for me to go to public places anyway. So, with or work-wise, fine, because I've treated everyone like they've had cooties since day one, because we're in the dental field, so that's how we were taught anyway. So, and I, bravo that people are washing their hands more often and they're being cleaner. That's it should have been that way from day one. And shopping carts should have been cleaned. I mean, MRSA lives on those things and it's pretty gross and anyway, so I love the fact that everything's more hygienic. I've been to Vegas a few times anyway, still, because that's my happy place even after the shooting. It took a while. I went back 6 weeks later and claimed my fame anyway from that, but really nothing has really changed other than the fact that the world kind of shut down, because I was an introvert anyway, but I've been handling it okay. Bored, just like anybody
No worries.
else. It kind of worries me a little bit with people's mental health now that things are opening up again and mass shootings are happening again. That worries me. It triggers my anxiety. But other than that, okay. I've been okay.
With the recent shootings that are going on, how are you handling? Because me personally, like the audience at home that have been keeping up with the podcast. Like I shared, I suffer now from, well, I've suffered this whole time without knowing that I've been suffering from PTSD.
Yeah.
Are these shootings triggering you at all?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What
Fear-stricken.
advice would you give to someone that's struggling right now that hasn't gone through any sort of therapy with as they're struggling with their PTSD?
My advice would be to get therapy. If I knew how well therapy would help, I would have got therapy years ago. But then again, I didn't really know I needed therapy until the shooting happened. Then it was like it opened Pandora's box. Then it was like, then I had to deal with my childhood trauma that I compartmentalized. It was like so deep that I had no idea. I mean, half the stuff I didn't even remember until the shooting. So for me, therapy really helped. But like I shared with you off air, just even the smallest things just went out at Walmart the other day. Being up front at the registers, that's hard for me because it's like, okay, well, if a mass shooter is going to come in, obviously the people in the front of the store are going to get it first. So that's really hard for me to do checkout because I'm a sitting duck. And so I watch, I look, where can I hide? Where can I do? Who can I help first? If there's children, that's the first one I'm going to help. I'm 51 years old. I've lived my life. These children need to have a life to live. So those are going to be the first ones that I'm going to help. I'm going to look for somewhere to throw them, save them, cover them, do something. So all these scenarios go through my head just while I'm trying to check out. I try to do self-checkout to get in and out as quickly as possible. But I mean, it's terrible. I mean, this is my life now. I can't even just enjoy to go shopping. I can't, grocery shopping. I actually am an Instacart shopper now, and that's even hard for me. And that's just to make extra money, just to have something to do on the weekend, and to have extra money to make, to save for a wedding, for my wedding, because I'm now engaged.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, lots of change since the 3 years since I've done the last podcast, but just anything like that in my life is that's my new normal. So I don't know. I just it's hard. Every day is a struggle. I will tell you that. Just the smallest of things. I don't even know what my triggers are. It could be a song. It could be anything. Just walking in the store. It could be a sound. There's the certain sound at Walmart. It's like a bing. I don't know what it is. Every once in a while, it's like bing, and I'm just like, what the hell is that? It's like sets me off, and I'm thinking, is that an alarm? What the hell is that? What's going on? I start freaking out. I don't know. It's just little things like that. But this is my life now. Like I told you before, will I go to the movies when they open again? No. Will I go to restaurants? Yes. I do enjoy going to a restaurant. I'm a thick girl. I like to go eat. That's fine. I'll do that. But as of going to clubs, no, I won't do that. Anything the stuff I used to love doing will be a daily, it'll be a struggle for me. Concerts, yes, I will say that. Yes, I will go to a concert. Do I go to casinos? Yeah, I'll go to a casino. Things like that. But am I at ease? No. Not like before. I'm not carefree. I plan escape route. I look at my surroundings. People have backpacks or big purses, or they look shady. Yeah, it's uncomfortable, especially now with masks. Scary because I can't see their face. If they have masks and sunglasses, freaks me out.
Well, there you go. The more you know, like, just that's why I love this about this podcast is that like we openly talk about our life issues with the mental health struggles that we have, and like right now, like how you're saying the masks issue and how it's all like we go out into public and we can't see people's faces, and that's a trigger. And when we talk about triggers, what we're talking about is there's certain things that trigger us, and like I always said, like going to Disney World, the staying in the hotels, I realized that the cleaning products trigger me because of the growing up part, and the same smell triggers me. And one of the triggers I did find to be very blah that I gave up was media. Social media was one of them. News outlets was another, and just like always hearing about all the bad stuff, the shootings, the uncertainty of where life is headed or where we're headed. It's always like we're headed into this shithole and there's riots, there's burning buildings, there's people dying, there's it's just never ending. And what that did to me is it fed into my trigger, and I had to give up social media, I had to give up media altogether. At least that's what pandemic has taught me thus far, is that we've been locked away with our mental disorders and mental struggles and distraught, and it's not good.
I tend to shut that off. I don't watch the news, and my fiance does. He's a big news watcher, and he likes to talk about it, and I like to shut that down. I can be a little gruff about that at times, which I apologize. Sorry, honey, if you're listening, when you do listen to this. I don't like to hear about it. I like to close myself off, which is probably not a good thing. I mean, I like to go with the whole ignorance is bliss kind of thing. And I guess that's probably not a good thing, but that's just how
It
I deal with
can
it
be.
sometimes.
What I'm taking it from the same perspective of you, because a lot of this negativity affects me so much, especially in the field I'm in. I hear the absolute darkest things that society never will talk about. It's hidden, it's taboo,
Yes.
it's and it deals within the family. The
Right.
family is the absolute key to, I think, what we're seeing with all the negativity outward,
Right.
projected outward into the world. I don't listen to the news either.
Yeah.
I had to shut that down. I take breaks from social media. Like prior to the I mean, getting back into the podcast, I had to remove myself because it's That's the only way I can help myself.
I feel like it's hatred is taught in the homes. I mean, this is just my opinion. And I agree to disagree with people, and it doesn't make me hate someone because they have a difference of opinions. Like my fiance and I, we don't agree on any of it. I mean, he totally has a complete different opinion as I do. We don't agree on any of it, and it doesn't make me love him less, and I don't think it makes him love me less. We just don't discuss it. We don't discuss politics whatsoever because we are on completely different sides, 100%. We don't discuss it because we have such different views about it. And I'm not going to argue with someone who I love, and it's not going to make me think any less of him because we were taught different things growing up. You see what I mean? And I'm not going to argue with him because he has his views. But I chose to raise my son differently, and I chose to have different views about it. It doesn't make my fiance a bad person because he has different opinions. You know, he just was raised different and he has different views, and that's okay. But I'm not going to argue with him about it. Or, you know, if he doesn't understand my views, it's not my place to make him understand my views. As well as him not to make me understand his. Does
And
that make sense?
that's beautiful. It's not just because our literally opinions, that's what
Right.
it is an opinion that does not define us.
Right.
And that's what we keep getting ourselves into is
Right.
it's like absolutes. Like you have to be all in or all out. And if you're in the
Right.
wrong side of the spectrum, you're no longer. I've lost
Yes.
friends over it, like
And it's
legitimately good
ridiculous.
friends.
I really feel that's ridiculous because we love and respect each other, and that's the way it should be. And I feel like people listen to each other to respond. They don't listen to hear one another. So when I have said things to him, he does sit and listen to me. He has listened to me, and I him. And he will see my point, and I do see his point. And there's no reason to argue about it. That's just how I feel. I respect him and he respects me. But it's the world today. I just feel like people just listen to respond. They're not listening to hear anything we're saying to each other. That's why there's so much hatred in this world. It's really sad. And my son is just so amazing. When he hears these things, he would go out and his post that he wrote, I was just so proud of him. He actually went out and he bought books about racism and he educated himself. And he even offered to buy these people these books to read them to educate themselves on it. Like, let's learn about it before we hate someone over it. Like, let's read about it. Just educate yourself. What's so hard about that? Why do you hate somebody over something you know nothing about? It makes no sense.
I liken it to like at the end of your life where you're completely stripped of everything and all that's left for you to bear is who you truly are, your character. What I mean by that is think about this scenario, elderly people. When we become old, elderly people, at the very core, that's who and what's left. Like think about the elderly people you've met. You've only met two types because there's only two types. There's very nice ones and then there's very mean ones. And by what I mean like that, like when we were younger, we're able to keep that even kilt where we can function in this world as, good or bad. But then when things come down to the end of our life, what we're left with is literally who we are. Character-wise, there's no in between because the in between is stripped. It's the job titles, it's the prestige, it's the everything that encompasses the nice cars, the homes, the whatever it is that is important to that person. It's stripped down at the core, and what is left is the actual character of that person. And it's bizarre to me that at the very end of our life, that all that's left is us, who we truly are. It doesn't matter. It don't matter how
Exactly.
much money you have in the bank. It doesn't matter what you've done for the world. One thing that I do think that's overlooked and that we can bond over is the actual trauma. The trauma that we've all gone through, it's hard for me. The trauma is still lingering And I didn't realize that my PTSD, even as a psychotherapist, it's going to be there the rest of my life. I just didn't.
Forever.
I broke down when I realized
We
it.
bear our childhood scars that are going to be there forever. I mean, it's you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still going to be a pig. We're going to have our
A
scars
cute
forever.
pig.
They're going to be there forever. And you
Yeah.
know, I used to be ashamed of them. I used to be so embarrassed by them, but I'm not anymore. I was a child. I didn't ask for it. I didn't deserve it. Why be embarrassed by it? I didn't. There's nothing, I did nothing wrong. So, and now I wear them like a badge of honor because I survived them.
That is the perfect way to put it. Not having shame, it's not our, they're not our sins to pay for. Unfortunately, we became the victims of our circumstances. And childhood trauma just it pops up in different ways, like with your experience and how my childhood trauma was like my dad and how violence got crept in and that's what I was governed as a kid with was like violence and stuff like that. So I guess what I'm trying to get to is with the audience right now is that trauma PTSD can come from anything because when I was diagnosed with it, I felt like embarrassed to a degree because it was like, oh, what war were you in? And the war of life. And I don't know which other way to put it. Except that you, Michelle, you are someone that has overcome them. You went through your childhood traumas, and you've been in this inspiration to me, and that's why I've had you back on this podcast is something to share your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I was even lucky enough to confront my abuser before he died. Unfortunately, I never got a sorry or an apology. And I actually was able to take my sister to confront him in the convalescent home before he died as well. I compartmentalized that so much that I didn't remember it till the shootings. And then once that Pandora's box was open, I remembered everything. I remembered every beating, every molestation. I remembered absolutely everything that I went through as a child. And it no child should ever have to have gone through that. You know, it made me a stronger person having gone through all of that. But you know, like I told you before, it will be in a book. I will end up writing a book, but and it's not for anybody really to read other than for me to put it on paper to make myself feel better, to get it all out. So, and if
It's
I do self-publish it, like you had told me that you would help me do, you know, even if two people read it, if it helps anybody feel better, even if it helps one person not feel ashamed, have who's gone through that. If it makes them feel better, if it makes them feel that they can talk about it, if it makes them feel like they can free themselves of the baggage they've been carrying around for years like that, then it's worth it for me to put that on paper.
No, a promise is a promise. Anytime you want to write this book, you let me know and I'll help you. But one of the things that with trauma, like your trauma, any childhood trauma that you deal with, and what I see too when I'm working with clients is there's this odd question that pops up a lot, and it's I've taken note with this question because it's a consistent theme of when childhood trauma occurs and people start to ask where other people come in, where do they play the role, with them knowing about the trauma or denying the trauma. It's just it's this consistent theme of nobody was there. How did you deal with that, or how have you dealt with that, or have you dealt with that?
It's sad because if you to know us, I mean, it really bothers me, quite honestly, to think. It's probably why I have so much resentment towards my parents. My father is deceased now, but he died with us not even speaking. I didn't speak to my father for probably about 5, 6 years. And I just have such resentment towards my parents because of it. It's like, how do you not know what your kids are going through? And I say that, but there is stuff that I'm sure that you there's parents that don't know. But my mom had to have known something that just like, and I'll give you an example. As kids, we were spoiled to the fact where, we had nice clothes. We were, we had nice things because they were guilt gifts. Whenever we went anywhere with his, it was like a, he was super popular with people and, he took us everywhere with him and we were very well-behaved children. So we only spoke when spoken to. We would sit on the couches with our hands folded and our legs crossed and we didn't play with other kids unless we were told to. We sat there very polite and it was yes, ma'am, yes, sir. We were very well dressed and you would think that we were spoiled rotten. And so, like I said, they had parties all the time, have parties at the house, and all these people would come over. Well, I sucked my thumb. Okay. I sucked my thumb till I was probably 7. And so he would try to break me of that habit. And so he would put chili on my fingers, on my thumb. Well, I would just suck another finger, or I'd wipe it off on my blanket. Well, I would get severely punished. Well, it came to the fat point where he didn't know what else to do. So he would duct tape my hands. So he would duct tape my thumbs. I would have to walk up to him and put my hands like this, and he would duct tape my thumbs to my hand like that, and literally duct tape my whole hands. Well, they would be having these parties, and it was time for us to go to bed, and so we would have to say goodnight to everybody. But I literally would have to walk up to him in front of a whole house full of people, and he would duct tape my hands. Like, what the hell, people? That's child abuse. Not one person would say anything as he would duct tape my hands and send me to bed. Not even my mother. What the hell? That's child abuse. Like, if I was at a party, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing to this poor child's hands? Like, what is happening here? But I would go to bed every night with my hands duct taped. I mean, that was just one thing, And I remember one night, my mom had to work two jobs. Well, she would work swing shifts, so she would work till like 11 p.m. at night. And one time he was being nice to us, and we had these white furry couches. And so he fed us, and then he gave us dessert. And apparently, I ate too much, and I told him I didn't feel good, and I vomited, and I got it on the couch. Well, I was in big trouble. I got it all over my hair, and I had really long hair and braids, and I threw up all over on the couch, and I threw up on my hair, and he smacked my face into it. And he threw me in the bathtub while I had to sit there until my mom got home in the bathtub with throw up all over my hair so my mom could wash my hair. My mom didn't get home until after 11 p.m. I was sitting in the bathtub in freezing water. By then it was cold, shivering, pruny, so until my mom got home for her to wash my hair. Hello. Red flags. Like, if that was my child, yeah. I mean, these are just some things. It's like, what is going on? Like, I would not keep my child there. So those are just a few like things that have happened to me, like as a child, It's just crazy. Like, so I have this resentment towards my parents. I feel like if my dad was, in my life more, maybe that wouldn't have happened. And if my mom wouldn't have turned cheek or turned a blind eye and got us out of there sooner. I mean, I don't know. It's just I don't have a relationship with my mother whatsoever. And I don't, my dad died with us not speaking. And that's unfortunate because I used to always say if something happened to him, I mean, would my life be any different because we don't talk anyway? And I said it wouldn't really matter. But when he died, it really affected me. And it still does. I have a lot of guilt because I did reach out to him when I heard that he had cancer. And he didn't respond to me. I reached out to him a few times and he didn't respond to me. In fact, he didn't even want me to know that he had cancer, but my sister convinced him to let her tell me. And then she didn't, they didn't tell me when he was in the hospital dying. I got a text 45 minutes after he died. And it was like, Dad died at 6:15. So that was pretty sad. It's like, well, I guess I didn't matter enough for him to even let me even have a chance to maybe possibly go see him before he died. But no, I
Who
guess I was.
protected Michelle when Michelle needed protecting? That's the
Nobody.
question I always ask my clients.
Nobody. My sister. Honestly, I want to save my sister.
That's a complete hard one to bear. Looking around and not feeling safe or secure and no stability, that has to be hard. And so I do have to ask. I have to ask, when was the first time that you could probably think back to and say that you really felt free or that you've escaped this trauma or have you escaped it? Is that something that you can kind of reflect on?
Honestly, no. It was probably when we moved, and we moved into this one bedroom, tiny little house, and it was us three, my mom and my sister, and me. Actually, it was just really, I think, me and my mom, because my sister didn't want to live with us, and I couldn't understand why. For some reason, she didn't want really to be with me and my mom. And I just remember not having any parental supervision whatsoever. My mom, we moved, and my mom was, I was 12, and my mom was like, go live your life. I was like, hello, I'm 12. And I had literally had no parental supervision. I'm 12 years old and I'm on the pier in Pismo Beach at 2 o'clock in the morning, fishing off the pier. 12 years old. 2 o'clock in the morning. No parental supervision. We would just, I honestly don't even know how I'm still alive, quite honestly. We would be out there. I even ran away once. I ran away from my mom's house because she would have different boyfriends. I won't say multiple, that was kind of rude, but she would have a different boyfriend. You know, they'd break up and she'd have a different boyfriend and she would try to punish me. And I'm like, I'm not going to be punished because your boyfriend said I should be punished. And so I ran away from home once. I was gone for a week and my mom didn't even know I was gone. I remember my friend's mom, Jenny's mom, said, honey, you've been here for a week. You need to go home. Like, you need to call your mom. So I remember calling my mom and telling her that I was ready to come home. And she was like, okay. And I was like, do you realize I've been gone for a week? She didn't even know I was ran away for a week. Like, so sad. That was my life. Literally.
It brings up the question as to why are our parents and even the listeners out there, it's that generational cycling within the family that we see. Why is there, you bring up great points, as in who the hell goes to a party? And it's like, later Chuck, later Steve, later Norm. Oh, Norm, what are you doing? I'm taping up this little girl's thumbs.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Not one person said anything. Nothing.
That is the norm of our society. And
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Turn a blind eye. It's like you mind your own business. Whereas I would be like, what the hell are you doing?
And I asked the question, who, because we are born into with a mom and a dad who are their main job is to protect us
Protect your
and
child.
to love us and give us the tools to thrive.
Yeah. And all I ever wanted was my parents' acceptance. Like, I never got my father's acceptance. And I remember the day when he told me that I was never going to learn and I was always going to do everything the hard way, and that I was his biggest disappointment. Those like that resonated. And so it was like, no matter what I did, I was never going to get his acceptance. So why bother trying?
Do you need it?
For some reason, I always felt like I wanted it. Like I always felt like I never felt like he ever loved me. Like I was never good enough. When he found out I was pregnant, I was 18 years old when I got pregnant with my son. And when I told him, he disowned me. When I told him on the phone, he said, he says, well, my daughter's dead to me. And he hung up on me. To this day, I mean, he's gone now, but he would swear on his life that he never said that. My mom was sitting next to me. My best friend Lisa was sitting next to me. They heard him. He swears on his life that he never said that to me, which he did. He just had this short-term memory. If you asked him, he would say he was the best father on earth. I remember one day he called me at work and he had me so upset. And when I hung up, my boss came out of his office because apparently he could hear us. And my boss looked at me and he says, don't you ever ask him for another thing. He does not deserve to be your father. If you need something, you come to me first. I will give you it. Don't ever ask him for another thing. Like even my boss could see that he was just not nice. He was just not a nice man to me, you know? I don't know why, but when he died, it just really hit me because it was like, God forbid, if I'm ever diagnosed with terminal cancer and I did not have a relationship with my child, you better believe the first thing I'm going to do is write my mom's. Like, I'm not going to leave this world not trying to make that right with my child of all people. Yep, no, he didn't even want me to know that he was dying. Like, he didn't even want at all. Like, what the heck? What did I ever do so wrong to make him just that angry at me to not even want me to know anything in his life? Like, that is hurtful, honestly. That's a pain that I can't even describe. So yeah, I mean, it's painful. And there's nothing I can do about it because he's gone.
It's the proverbial door that has been closed. And yeah. I completely hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's this denial. I don't think I've shared this on the podcast, and I'll share it with you. Running into my own dad, he's home. A few years ago, while I was doing my training ship, I had gotten a call. Somebody was looking for him. And I thought it was a scam phone call. And so I messed around with, you know how I am. I messed around with him, and lo and behold, it was legitimate. And he had some sort of money or inheritance from an aunt. And I wasn't going to tell him because one, I had closed the door on him. And two, I didn't think he deserved it, but I prayed on it for some reason. And as pandemic hit, I went and found him. Oh, because wow. I told myself, the cycle, the maladaptiveness, the hatred, all of it just ends with me. I mean, the number one thing I take from therapy and from treatment is I'm in control. I have the power to be able to put my boundaries down and to be able to control situations to a degree and actually accept the situations that I can't control. But in this case, I went out looking for him after some time has passed, and I found him. And I pulled up into a parking lot, and he was at a bus stop, and I started talking to him. And he said he didn't remember who I was, but he knew he had two boys and didn't know which one I was. And started talking to me in a manner that he didn't talk. He was very well-spoken. And so he had told me, I broke my head in 2013. That's something he wouldn't say. That's not even proper English. And so he asked me point blank, why don't you love me? why don't you, why haven't you come look, why haven't you not come look for me? And my heart sank. And I'm like, this is not how I planned it. And I had prayed before I went and did it. I said, please give me the strength. And, you know, God, give me the strength that I need to do it. And I went through all these scenarios in my head. And this one never occurred to me that he, and I quote, lost his memory. So I put my healthy boundary up and I said, look, things are the way they are, not because of me and not because of you. They just happen the way they happened. I'm okay with the way they happened. I'm not here to come get you and take care of you. I'm simply here to tell you, you have some money. I don't know how much it is, but I think you deserve to at least get off the streets. And he just started crying and crying and crying and stopped talking to me, turned his wheelchair around and faced the street. And it broke me to a degree. And I drove off and I called Shirelli and I said, I just seen my dad. I don't know what to do. Should I pick him up and bring him home? And then as soon as I said that, I think God told me it was okay, because I stopped crying. I'm like, I'm okay. I said, I didn't do this. His life is the manifestation of his choices. And unfortunately, he couldn't overcome his trauma. And I'm okay with it.
Right.
And so I totally get that. You can't get that closure. I would love the closure to at least go and talk to him, but I know I'll never get it. Here's why I know he's lying, though. 2 days later, I'm driving down the street, taking my friend somewhere, giving him a ride, and told him the story already. Oh, yeah, let me preface everything before I tell you how we seen him. He apparently could not walk, because when we see him walking, he shuffles, like, with his feet. And apparently he was in a car accident, and he had a stroke and some other things. We seen him on Broadway riding a bicycle.
Oh, my gosh.
And then he turns the corner, and he's riding a bicycle on a side street, just doing circles. And I said, that motherfucker, he got me again. And I was like, I don't know whatever happened to him after that. Because pandemic, I stayed in. And this is the kind of psychotic behavior that unfortunately you and I experience. Like our parents, you know, they had their own traumas. But it has to come to a point where you have to stop and say, enough is enough. As in, enough is enough. Why are you taping Michelle's fingers to her hands, like her thumbs? Yeah. Like, what are you? Are you insane?
What does it matter if I sucked my thumb? Like, what? Like, seriously, I sucked my thumb for a reason, because we were getting our ass beat, you know? Like, what the hell? That was my outlet.
Yeah, it was just your coping mechanism. Yeah. And it's so sad, the devastation that people's actions leave. And unfortunately, there are those that rise and overcome it. You're one of them. You even painted it perfectly, I don't think without meaning to, that your son will never know any of the crap, any of the pain, any of the fear, any of the trauma that you went through. You have stopped that and improved upon it.
His trauma from me is different.
That's where I'm getting at. We all have that trauma.
I was like a helicopter parent. Apparently I was a helicopter parent.
But it's trying to improve on top of the next generation, because look at what happened. You gave birth to this little boy who is now a man, who is now out contributing to the betterment of society. He is out there fighting for the betterment of society. He's not out there at bars. He's not out there beating women. He's not out there. He's not doing all these crazy things that we see so often with the family system being so broken.
Yeah.
I want you to cycle.
Yes, I did.
Swear to God, you did. I want you to be proud of yourself, because
thank you.
One, don't buy into the bullshit these people have told you your whole life.
That's
that
right.
You're worth, that you're worthless, that you're not deserving of love. Who? Here's one thing. Your dad dying and not wanting you there, that's a blessing.
Yeah.
He did not deserve you.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around. It's not that you deserved him. No, he did not deserve you. That's unfortunately mm-hmm. the sad effect of things.
You know, it's surprising to me that I didn't turn out to be a drug addict or an alcoholic. Like, surprising.
You've overcome society standards. You're no longer, you should have been a statistic.
Right.
You should have been on drugs.
Mom, I mean, obviously it was a statistic as a teen mom, but honestly, that was God's way of saving me. My son saved my life. I tell him that all the time. He literally saved my life. I was nobody going nowhere fast. And my son made me grow up and like, hey lady, you're going to fucking be somebody because you have somebody to take care of now. So yeah, my son saved me, literally saved my life.
If you could give advice to parents or anybody that wants to become a parent, what would you say would be the number one advice about being a parent?
Oh gosh.
Not even it doesn't have to be the number one. Just what would be some advice you would offer to somebody?
Just literally listen and love your child unconditionally. Let him know that you're his safe place or their safe place. I mean, you know, you don't ever want your child to be like, oh shit. You know, if they're in trouble, you don't want them to be like, oh shit, I gotta call my mom. You want them to be like, oh shit, I need to call my mom. Like, you know, not to be afraid to call you. You know what I'm saying? You don't want them to be like, you know, you need to be like, okay, I'm in trouble. I need to call my mom. Like, not to be afraid to do that. You just need to love them and listen to them. Like, I get apparently, like, my son, there was one time where my son said something that really resonated with me. And he was like, he said it, and I don't know if he said it like he was kidding, but he was like, oh, well, you know, you got pregnant with me and like, I ruined your life. It's like, no, you didn't ruin my life. You saved my life, like, literally saved my life. You know, yes, I was only 18 years old, but you like saved my life, kid. Like, you don't realize how much you saved my life. Like, you were everything to me. Like, you saved my life. And I may have not always been the best mom, and I still, like, I made mistakes. But whether or not he learned from my mistakes what not to do, I still raised that kid, and he turned out amazing. So if I never do anything right in my life again, I did that one thing right. Like, I nailed it. Like, he's amazing. Like, I want to grow up and be just like him. Like, he is that amazing. He is just that amazing. Like, I'm in awe of that. Like, some days I like sit there and think like, I did that. Like I did that. Whether, like I said, like, whether or not he learned from my mistakes, like, I don't care. I did that. Like, he's that amazing. It's awesome. Like, a single mom did that. And no disrespect to his dad, because his dad's amazing. Like, his dad and stepmom and I, we're all best of friends. Like, we get along so great. Like, I love them so much. And, you know, his dad needed to go away and go to school and become something. And he did. He's amazing. But, yeah, I did that. He's awesome. I was a helicopter parent. Like, I was not going to let him grow up the way I grew up. Like, you know, when he came home, mom, I'm going to go to so-and-so's house. Okay, well, who's his parents? What's their address? What's their phone number? You know, it's like, I'm going to spend the night here. Okay, well, I'm going to drive you over there and I'm going to be his parents. Like, oh my God, mom, why? Because I don't know if they're drug addicts. I don't know who they are, and I'm going to know who they are and what's happening. And I want to make sure they're home. And then he'd be like, forget it, mom, I'm not going.
Like, you ruined the plans.
He's like, why do you always have to embarrass me? It's like, because it's my God-given right to embarrass you for the rest of your life, and I'm gonna do it.
Amen. You're leaving a legacy, and your legacy is changing and improving the next generation's life so that they can thrive and succeed. I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been, I want you back on because I think we have so much more to talk about. And I an hour is just not good enough.
Right. I could talk to you for hours.
I know.
I'm like in awe of you. I'm like one of your biggest fans, kid. I will say that till I am in the grave. I'm telling you, I'm one of your biggest fans. I just see you going so far, and I'm always going to say it. I knew you win. I knew you win, kid. I got
I'm
nothing
no one
but
special.
Love for you. So much love
Thank
for you.
Thank you. I love you too. And you have been a very impactful person on my life and contributing to my life so much. Just coming on the podcast, you did not need to come on and share all the stuff that you shared about that night in Vegas. And it helped so many people. And literally that's the only reason I do this podcast. It's not monetary. It's not for anything, but just for somebody out there that feels lost, lonely, depressed, all these
it's
things.
Spreading hope like fire, babe. That's what you're doing.
I love having Michelle on the show. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure having her back on and being able to explore and discuss these topics. We can't wait to have you back on, Michelle. And if you're struggling, we're encouraging you to reach out, seek the help of a professional in your community. As always, treatment works. Just give it that chance. Just give it that chance to let it work. If you like this show, we have a archive full of other episodes. We have Michelle's past episode on there. We have other topics and concerns we've talked about over the years. And so we just encourage you to hit the archives, catch up on past episodes. Also, if you like this show, head over to Apple iTunes Podcast Store and hit that 5-star review and write a review letting others know what you think of the podcast so that we can keep growing, keep breaking the stigma on mental health. And if you'd like more information on who we are, the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, you can always head over to spreadhopelikefire.com. For the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, Michelle Patterson and Anthony Garcia, I'm Anthony Garcia. Take care of those you love. Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody, the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.